The Candyman can. The Candyman can have a sequel just a few short years after the first one. Because welcome to the Bitter End podcast with me, Todd Jordan.
And me, Tom Denny.
And we are two episodes now into our Candyman season, season 12 of this podcast, where we're ploughing through the strange and sort of lesser explored franchise of Monsieur Candy.
Monsieur Candy.
We are here today to discuss the 1995 sequel to the original. So there's been just a lapse of just 3 years. This is Candyman, Farewell to the Flesh, which is directed by a Mr. Bill Condon, who is responsible for the vast majority of the Twilight movies, also Dreamgirls.
Whoa, okay, what? Hang on.
I know. So this is going to be interesting.
And his name sounds like Condom.
I know!
And that's just funny.
That's a 1-2 punch from right. Big Billy Johnny's.
Wow, okay. Candyman, two candy, two man.
Well, that's the thing. It's interesting to me straight off the bat. It's not called Candyman 2. It's
yeah.
called Candyman Farewell to the Flesh. Now.
And it's not even a 2. It's not Farewell to
Flesh.
Not even that. This is classy stuff here, folks.
Now, what does that mean, though? Because he wasn't particularly fleshy to begin with. The bees had napped most of it.
Like, yeah,
it's not farewell to the bees.
I mean, there was a bit of flesh. There was the stump, I guess.
Yeah,
is
farewell
it that?
To the stump.
Yeah.
So we watched the trailer, though.
We did. And how do you feel about this trailer?
Fine.
Yeah. Feels very much like it's a sequel horror trailer from 1995. Like, whereas the first film feels like a film, right? This feels very trailery. Like, it feels like it's like we're trying to give you more, but also more of the same. There's no Virginia Madsen.
No Virginia Madsen. We got, but we do have, obviously, Tony Todd makes an appearance. We've got the same kind of douchebag intellectual guy that was friends with Trevor, the husband from the first one. He's in it.
Yes, he's the connective tissue, as well as obviously the Candyman, who, even from this trailer, it seems like he's in this film a lot more.
And I don't mind that. Yeah. I'm not, you know, oh, you've got to keep him away, you've got to keep him hidden. I don't feel like that because I love Tony Todd and it's an amazing character. The thing I'm a little worried about is the trailer seems to be making a big deal of, like, this is the one where we're going to explain everything.
Yeah, it looks like there's going to be a lot more, like actual flashbacks to how the Candyman was made, going back into ye olde times.
Yeah.
But it also feels like we've got a Virginia Madsen alike who's going around being like, huh, you don't believe in that legend. I'm going to find out all about it. I'm going to do what Virginia Madsen did in the first film. Yeah, I'm going to do some investigating and people might not like it. And then I'm going to get involved with the Candyman, see? which is how I assume she talks. But so that feels like a little bit like, you know, like a familiar way in, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that could be fine.
Maybe they'll surprise us.
I think the big problem is, and this is unfair to the filmmakers, all I really want is just more of the first one.
Yeah.
And you can't really do that, so.
Yeah. Looks like did some of this look like it was set at Halloween? Or like there might have been some sort of spooky parade?
Yeah, there were some maybe interesting things going on. There was like a spooky parade of people like holding up signs to be like, we love the Candyman or whatever. And then there were also some posters up with like a picture of Candyman's hook with like a line through it to be like, no hooking.
No murdering with hooks, please.
Like he's going to come up and see that and be like, oh, okay. Oh, they've said I can't.
There's a rowdy mob in the street just kind of like overturning beehives or something like that, smashing jars of honey, like, fuck you, Candyman.
Yeah.
So there could be some interesting stuff in there. Just feels a little bit more shiny and pulpy, right?
Like, yeah, and I like shiny and pulpy.
Yeah, feels like this could be like a slightly more popcorn version of Candyman. But we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, as we enter our third consecutive hour of devoting our lives to Candyman.
That's what I want.
So, Thomas,
yes.
Before we can do it, before we can plough headlong into that vat of honey that will be Candyman.
I'm going to be like Winnie the Pooh with my head stuck in a spooky honey jar.
My question for you is, what do you think the good users of IMDb will have rated Candyman Farewell to the Flesh from 1995? Now, I will remind you that the original Candyman from 1992 scored a whopping 6.7.
I don't think it's going to have fallen too far from the tree. Like, the trailer still looked kind of all right. 6.1?
I'm afraid it's a little bit lower than that. It is a 5.3.
Oh, that's a big drop.
That's a more than an entire 1.0's worth of droppage. Ouchie wah wah. So
that's too many bees.
That's too many bees spoil the broth. That's what they say.
Generally, I like no bees in my broth.
So, well, exactly.
Oh, there we go.
Too many.
Exactly. And this film's got a lot of bees.
A lot of bees. I'll tell you what, there's some... Oh, God, the bees on this movie. You would not believe. Right, well, is there anything else to do it other than to say farewell to the flesh of this introduction and say hello and howdy-do to the flesh of watching the movie?
I say bees to that.
For thousands of years, humans have misunderstood them and feared them. Now, one bee in a turtleneck sweater is gonna change everything.
One's bald, one's in a boat, and they're both unconscious.
Jerry Seinfeld, Renee Zellweger. DreamWorks Bee Movie.
Oh, sugar, do 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 do. Oh, honey, honey, do 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 do. You were my candy man, and you're mostly made out of bees.
Well, that's why it's farewell to the flesh.
Exactly. Farewell and hello to bees.
Hello to bees, baby. From now on, it's all bees.
Where have you been? Oh, it's going to be bee puns from here on out, folks.
Quite a bit more bees in this one. Got to say, there weren't that many bees in the first one other than in the toilet.
You better believe it. This is the podcast now, folks.
Yep. Welcome to the bee-ter end.
With Bee Tom Denny.
And...
Okay.
And bees.
All right, Billy Big Bees. We're talking about Candyman, Farewell to the Flesh, the film that you and I have just watched.
Yeah, and let me tell you, it's fine.
It's okay, I guess.
It's completely fine. There are bits of it that I had a strong negative reaction to that are nothing to do with the plot or the franchise at all. And then there were bits that I really liked that they could have dove into a bit more. Straight off the bat, I'll say this. It's set in New Orleans. Didn't need to be.
Nope. It felt like it was like, it's a sequel. We're going to put it somewhere else. We're going to do it in New Orleans. I feel like this film... having just watched it, does not stick with me as much as the first one.
Yes, because listeners, with the first one, the movie ended, we straight away jumped on the mic. We could not wait to talk about it. This one, second one we watched back to back, it ended and we were like, I think we need a coffee.
Yeah.
So we took a little pause to make some coffee and show each other funny YouTube videos.
We talked about Philip Glass because we'll get to... Philip Glass is back for the soundtrack.
I don't know if anyone told him he was back though.
I don't think so. But someone knew. Yeah. My God, did they know?
Yeah, so that is a point straight off the bat. So the amazing Philip Glass score from the original Candyman from 1992.
Goes a little something like this. Ha, 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 ha. On and on.
But it's back. It's not a re-recording. It's the exact same recording as the last one. Maybe slightly lower quality, like someone just bought the soundtrack album on cassette and used that. And it does not stop. It's continuous. All the way through this movie, to the point that there are scenes in this movie where other music is playing and they're still playing the Philip Glass score underneath the other music. It's really weird.
So some kind of like, you know, dramatic chase music, but just if you just cock your ear, you'll just hear ha, 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 rumbling away in the background. Okay, this film starts with the sound of Philip Glass and... the backstory of the Candyman, as told by the Stephen Fry-esque academic from the first film. And he is in New Orleans on a book tour doing his book about Monsieur Candy.
Yes.
He's recounting sort of the backstory of Candyman falling in love with the young lady, getting killed, coming back. All the stuff, the events that happened in the first film with Helen and people asking questions. And like, they're kind of like, hey, it's like, do you believe in Candyman? It's like, oh, no, I believe in the myth, but I don't believe in the monsters. And he like does this bit where his Candyman book that he's published has a mirrored book cover, which is actually pretty cool. Mwah. And he looks in it and he calls out Candyman five times and nothing happens. And everyone goes, ha, 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 ha. And he stands in front of his big projector screen and he's like, well, yeah, thank you for coming to my book tour. Oh, my God! And a hook comes through. And it turns out it's just some lad who's working for him. And this is like how he ends all of his book talks.
With a hilarious I'm dead prank.
Yeah. What a massive, like, what a serious journalist and academic he must be.
My favourite thing is the audience that it cuts to, who are all just sat there watching it. And they're like, they gasp. But none of them are like...
doing anything.
Yeah.
They're all, no one's running. No one's like going to help him. They're all just like, oh, I want to see how this pans out. Yeah.
So I like that. And then he goes out into the streets of New Orleans. And he gets visited by a young man called Ethan, who he's had encounters with before. And Ethan seems like a troubled young man. And he's like, you misled my dad. You know what killed him. And this guy, the academic whose name is Purcell, is like, look, your dad was insane. He thought the Candyman was real. And Ethan is like, he is real. And you didn't warn him. And now he's dead.
Yeah. And he's like, well, we're going to walk our separate ways.
And he goes into a bar and he like sits down and he says, give me a shot of Jim Beam or something like that. And he like gets the Jim Beam and then Ethan comes back and like punches him in the head. And then the bartender just goes absolutely apeshit. He grabs Ethan, but he like drags him down the entire length of the bar, like deliberately smashing every glass that there is. Then he throws him through a window of his own bar. Now, I'm not saying a good bartender won't like step up and protect his customers.
Yeah. But by smashing his own bar, I will defeat you with my own property. And Ethan gets carted away by the police, and then is it Purcell? He goes to the toilet and he gets fucking Candymaned.
It's quite, it's a bit of a quick Candymaning, but he gets hooked in the loo,
right?
And it's
up
all
the wazoo.
It's all right, hooked in the loo, up the wazoo, and it's all right at this point. I'm like cool.
That's a nice opening. We get there's Tony Todd, he's there, Mr. Braxis himself, the Eye of. And then we're still in New Orleans. We get a big kind of like carnival, Mardi Gras type of parade going on. And there's like, you've got this radio DJ who's talking over the top of it called the Catfish.
No, he calls himself, it's worse than that. It's the Kingfish.
Oh, the Kingfish, sorry.
Which is worse, considerably.
Yeah. And so we were talking about this and like, you know how in The Warriors, there's the radio DJ who kind of is commenting on the events of the night and where the Warriors are and what gangs are going up against them and kind of does move the plot along, and that you get that the characters in the film are listening to them being like, hey, out there, boppers, the Warriors. This is like that if it's just, but not. It's kind of like similar idea, worse execution, because it just seems like it's just like this rambling man talking to, maybe in the beginning, give some exposition and explain what the farewell to the flesh means. Something to do with Lent.
Yeah, so it's Mardi Gras time in New Orleans, and he's talking about how the word carnival is like from carne and va, which is basically goodbye to the flesh, and because that's when you give things up. So, yeah.
But it just means that he'll kind of like... Every now and then you'll just have this radio bit show up, you know, in between like a shot of like a character walking from one place to another. They'd be like, hey everybody, it's the Kingfish. I guarantee the Mississippi will rise and the banks will burst with blood and
he just says a load of New Orleansy shit. It's just New Orleansy shit.
Yeah.
And like I wrote down something that he said. There's a bit where he's like, and we are to believe like this is a popular DJ that's just always on the air and everyone's listening to. There's a bit where he goes, I got hooves on my shoes and horns on my head. I want life on a platter and you can keep the silverware. And it just goes, but like it goes on for ages. Why was that in? There's only one bit where he comments even remotely on anything that's going on in the film, where he says, and I quote, this is going out to the man with the hook. Man, chill, have some gumbo or something.
It's like meant to be like he's the voice of the community, but it's just like a you know, just some flowery New Orleans-y shit dialogue most of the time.
I don't mind a bit of local colour, but, like, it comes up a lot.
And doesn't serve much purpose. It's, yeah, it's there for mood, I guess, but I could do without the
it's
mood.
It's pretty at odds with the Philip Glass gothic.
Yeah, because yeah, that's still going on in the background. Never forget.
Well, this guy's like, ah, Cajun spices! Hey there, Crescent City!
Yeah, it's like, oh, the banks are going to burst like my belly full of oysters or something. It's
yeah,
like, what?
Get fucked, Kingfish.
That's enough of that. Anyway, after all that nonsense, we are going to get to Annie, who is our hero of the story. She is an art teacher. It turns out that she is Ethan's sister.
Yep. So Ethan being the young troubled man that got arrested for attacking Purcell in the bar.
Yes. And she's like an art teacher teaching all these kids. And there's this one kid called Matthew who's drawing some very Candyman backstory-esque paintings. But no time for that. We got to go and look after Ethan. She's going to go and get her mum, played by Veronica Cartwright, who's been in loads of stuff. She was in Alien. One of the, you know, the Starship Troopers in Alien.
Yeah.
She's good. She's just like a hard drinking New Orleans, well-to-do white woman who's got cancer and just seems to be very sort of nihilistic about that.
Yeah.
And they're going to go to
the police station to get Ethan out of jail. Now, the problem is Ethan has confessed to killing Purcell.
Yeah, and the thing is there has been other Candyman murders. So basically one of the things that Purcell was saying in his opening is that, like, the myth of the Candyman kind of travels around the world and it's made its way to New Orleans, and there are Candyman-esque killings that have been going on. So he's copped to the lot for reasons?
Well, he's copped to the lot, I think, because he is possibly trying to manufacture a similar thing to Virginia Madsen in the first film. I think he thinks that if people think that he was the Candyman and now he's been arrested,
it'll stop,
it'll like strip him of his power or something. But he's also clearly got some like unresolved issues, because it becomes apparent that he was the one who found their dad when he died.
Yes.
And possibly saw more than he has told his sister.
And this is what Annie wants to get to the bottom of. She's like, tell me the truth, you're full of shit. And so now she's off on a quest to find out what Ethan saw, what he knows. So she's going to go with her husband to the old kind of like plantation-y mansion that she grew up in.
Which is also the house where her father died, yes. And this is quite good, this bit. This is proper, like, spooky old New Orleans-y rundown mansion. It reminds me a little bit of some of the latter scenes from Interview with the Vampire, where mm-hmm. it goes a bit more modern day, and there's, like, Tom Cruise is, like, rotting away in some room somewhere. That's quite good, and it's full of homeless people and loads of graffiti.
Lots of Candyman murals.
We get a lot of Candyman style, her wandering around looking at graffiti and bumping into, slightly scary people who are squatting in the house and stuff. And then she just sort of persuades her husband to just let her go downstairs alone for some reason. And she finds something? Does she find anything?
I don't think she finds anything. There's a lot of, like, wandering around and looking for clues, but I can't remember, like, anything, like, particularly happening. It seems like any time that you think something's going to happen, there'll just be a jump scare noise. Like, someone will pop up and put their hand on someone's shoulder, but they accompany that jump scare with, like, the sound of, like, an animal screaming. It's like, that was just a person walking down the stairs. Why are they making that noise?
Yeah, I did write down the note, way too many jump scares. And I'm a guy, I know that jump scares are not popular. I like them, usually, when they're okay.
They work well, right?
Yeah. But then the upshoot of this is that she ends up back at her kids class, her art
yes.
class, and Matthew is in a fight with some kids because he has painted what seems to be the origin story of the Candyman. He's painted this guy being lynched, and I don't know why the other kids are beating him up about it.
I think it's because there have been Candyman murders in the area, so I think people just think it's in bad taste, if anything.
Okay, and it probably is.
Because she's been going around the area and they've got all these, like, no hook.
Yeah.
Like, don't do a Candyman signs up. No Candyman's here, please.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bit confusing for me, at least. And then to prove to the kids that he's not real, even though she's just been trying to investigate this some of this stuff herself, she says Candyman five times in the mirror, and one solitary bee shows up to say hello.
Yeah, and that bee makes the noise, ha, 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 ha. So, I mean, that was silly, right? So then there's going to be a bit more snooping around, some chatting, some business. I don't know. This bit kind of gets a little bit kind of like, what happens?
Well, I'll tell you why, Tom, because that's when our takeaway arrived.
That's when the takeaway arrived.
So we stopped making notes because we were eating.
So nothing really interesting happened until her husband gets killed by the Candyman.
Yeah. And this bit's quite good because, interesting, her husband isn't a prick in this one.
Yep. He's all right. He's just some guy.
Yeah, unlike the first one, he's some guy. I think he's a chef.
Yeah.
And he dresses like he should be like a stereotypical Cajun, but his voice is like, hello, I'm a Cajun. Hi.
He's not as good as Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I was born on the Mississippi. but yeah, he gets Candymaned.
And this is quite a gruesome shot because it's like right in front of Annie. And you just kind of like see the hook kind of like just going all the way through this guy.
Yeah.
And this is the point where like, oh, okay. So she's getting like in the first film where like Candyman's shown up, killed somebody. And then Annie gets pulled in for it. They think that she's killed the husband. And then she is allowed to, she gets bailed out by the mum and is later allowed to go back to the police station and talk to her brother. So she's someone who is on bail under suspicion of murder and is allowed to go back to the police station and say, can I speak to my brother, someone who also is under suspicion of murder for very similar crimes?
So like, weird.
Yeah, like, I don't think that would fly.
No. And I would expect more logic from the man behind the Twilight movies.
Yes, right. A crucial bit of info that gets dropped by the Candyman during this is he says that Annie's pregnant.
Yes, he tells her in the sort of the creepy way, you have a life growing within you. At this point, do you think anyone watching this movie has no idea of what the big final third act reveal is going to be?
Couldn't even begin to guess.
Anyway, Michael, the little boy from her class, has gone missing.
Oh, no.
And the whole neighbourhood is freaked out. And word has gotten out. And people don't particularly like Annie. They don't really know. It's not like they think she kidnapped him or anything. But they're just like, look, you're a bad apple. And despite this, she goes to go see his dad, who is a priest, who seems like he knows something about... He, like, shows her around his son's bedroom, and it's just this, like, creepy altar to Candyman.
Yeah, it's, like, goth as shit. It's all full of, like, burnt dolls, like, spooky things.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, I just happen to have all the records of all the slaves that were born in New Orleans, and I can tell you that the Candyman and you know was born in the slave quarters of your old family home. Yep. And she's like, but that's my old family home.
From the priest, she goes to see her brother again, who gets and wheedles a little bit more info out of him and says that for whatever reason, he's like, don't be looking into Candyman. That's what got Dad killed. And she's like, tell me. And he says, well, our dad said that he'd found a way to finally destroy the Candyman. That's what he was doing that night that he died. He turned up to meet him, and if he'd been like 5 minutes earlier, he might have been able to save him. And all she knows is that their dad was he was speaking to some mystical voodoo guy, possibly.
Yeah, dealing in like spooky artifacts.
Yeah, so she goes to go see him, and now he's a snow cone man.
But he has a secret door in his snow cone shack, and it's like full of, you know, arcane trinkets and all this kind of stuff. And he's explaining about, you know, what her dad wanted, and he's got this, pulls down this big sheet, and he has the portrait of the Candyman's lover that he painted. And in that painting, you can see like her mirror on the little side table, and reflected in the mirror is the Candyman. And so this is the new bit of lore for this film, that this it's supposed that this mirror is the source of the Candyman's power.
Yes, he's able to live life after death because in his dying moment, he moved his soul into his lover's mirror.
And that's why he comes out when people say his name in mirrors. And
yeah, and their dad was trying to find the mirror so he could destroy it once and for all.
Yes, and she's kind of like, my God, this is excellent, excellent information. I hope that nothing bad happens. Oh no, the Candyman's here, and he's gonna be this motherfucker to death. I think he probably gets a bit of, you know, hook.
Bit of hook,
but a lot more bee. There's a whole bunch of bees in this.
Way
in
more
this
bee.
Kill. The guy's like all covered in bees. He gets thrown through a wall. There's this detective that's trailing Annie, who's like, oh, jeez, there's all loads of bees over here. Oh, my God, I'm going to go and get this Annie. She's no good. She's made out of bees, I guess.
Meanwhile, we keep cutting back to the kingfish on the radio being like, Mardi Gras, boo, rivers, Cajun, oysters.
Crawdads.
Crawdaddies, crab boil. I guarantee. Anyway, back to the movie.
Yeah, like, okay, I've learned nothing from that little interjection, but I guess it was atmospheric? I don't know.
Then, is this when Ethan meets his sad demise?
Oh, yeah, this is good. So, the cop who was tracking Annie and saw the man, the snow cone man, get beed to death, he, like, goes back and he's like, yo, what the fuck, Ethan? Your sister's the Candyman and you're trying to cover it up. And he's like, no, it's not. I was like, why are you afraid of Candyman? And, like, he's in this interview room, which is just covered in mirrors. And so he grabs Ethan and just, like, shoves him against the glass. And he's there just going, Candyman, Candyman, Candyman. And then he says it five times. And then, straight through the gullible with a big old hook. And, yeah, he's dead.
Don't see him no more. He gets chucked out the window.
And then Ethan's kind of like, oh, shit. And he runs and he gets shot by a cop trying to flee the scene of the crime.
Which makes sense. I understand why they would shoot him. But there's quite a good creepy bit that follows when this other cop is just like trying to write up the report of what happened or whatever. And she checks. Because this happened in the police station, right? Yeah. So she's just watching the CCTV and she physically sees like Ethan cowering in the corner as the dead cop is like lifted, floating into the air and like flown around.
And his shirt's ripping open, he's billowing out blood. Yeah, that's a good bit.
And you know, to her credit, we don't normally, it's not always cool to like cops, is it? But this one, to her credit, she's like, hang on a minute, something funny going on here.
Yeah.
She's a clever one.
Yeah, she puts two and two together and comes up with Candyman. So now, like, basically, Annie's like, well, it would seem that my family is somehow tied to the Candyman. I'm going to go and snoop around in my mum's, like, house. And she goes through this, like, box of photos. And there's, like, an old family photo. And she finds out that, like, basically, she found out the name of the Candyman's daughter.
Which was Isabel.
And that is the name of her like, great-grandmother.
So her mum's grandmother was Isabel. And they have like a heated, shouty exchange. It's very shouty, this scene.
Yeah.
Just lots of sort of top volume, like, Mum!
Why didn't you tell me we were part Candyman?
I thought we were Dutch-Irish.
Yeah, right.
But no,
I'm a bee, apparently.
But yeah, the mum was like ashamed of
the murderous legacy.
Yeah, ashamed to be related to Candyman, and so like just was trying to keep it all like on the DL, just didn't want anyone to know. And like there may be even like maybe this plan would have worked, right? Because if people stop talking about Candyman, he will apparently go away, right? Unless you don't break his mirror, in which case then he's around forever.
Yeah,
I don't know, it's a little bit loose.
I'm not sure what holds more sway.
This bit is also a little bit confusing because then Candyman shows up and kills the mum, who's like, "You cannot deny me," but like, that's your great-granddaughter, mate. Aren't you supposed to like her?
This is the big thing that confuses me because he's obviously got this thing for Annie because he's like, Annie, you know, you're in my part of my blood, blah blah blah. We are linked. This other one that's part of my blood, fuck her.
I guess because she tried to deny him.
I guess, and that like you know killed the husband. I guess he wasn't part of the blood, but like you know, and then Ethan has gone crazy. It's like why Annie, other than the fact that she is the scent, you know. Yeah. There's no why as to Annie. It's just, yeah, because she's the main character. So it does feel weird that he just goes and brutally murders his blood relative while he's desperately trying to connect with another one of his blood relatives.
Yeah, I guess it must just be because she was like, if she'd have been like, you know what?
She's trying to like,
I'm changing my last name to Mrs. Candyman, then maybe he would have been like, fine.
Yes, I guess it's that. It's that kind of thing of like trying to erase him and from the history. Anyway, so the mum gets killed.
And we didn't really talk about the flashback that we see about Candyman's origin, which is quite brutal.
Yes, it is. It's pretty grisly. I mean, does this happen at this point or does it happen a little bit later?
It happened earlier. It happened when they go see the snow cone voodoo guy.
Right, yes. So we see the story that we've been told about how the Candyman gets killed, right?
Yeah.
It's grim.
Yeah, it's really grim. They chop his hand off. It's disgusting. They're in like a field, I guess, presumably meant to be Illinois, because it's a lot more, I don't know, it looks different. It doesn't look like New Orleans, which is good.
Yes, that was a slightly kind of confusing.
Well, the reason, so they talk about this as well, but basically after his death, his lover moved into his old family home. Like, I guess she inherited it from him or something, but that's where she raised the baby. So he was killed in Chicago.
Yeah.
But then the daughter was brought up in New Orleans. Anyway, they chop his arm off. It's grim. They bring out the bees. That's disgusting. His face goes all horrible and beed.
We were told that like he was pursued by a gang of like the dad's thugs who killed him, but there was just like children and just like local women of the town. All like everyone was gathering around, and we get like the backstory of like why he's called Candyman. Like they're like rubbing all this fucking like honeycomb over him, and this like little kid gets like a bit of honey on his cheek, and he licks it off, and he's like Candyman, and everyone goes like, that's a brilliant name, Candyman.
It catches on.
Everyone finds that really, really great. And I was like, Honeyman, surely. Like,
you know, sometimes when a nickname sticks.
Yeah. It's like, is it too late for Honeyman? No, we've moved up. We've got Candyman. We're moving on. And then in the first film and in this film, there's like, we see this graffiti that said sweets for the sweet.
Yeah.
And this one woman points at Candyman and shouts, sweets for the sweet. And it's kind of like,
that doesn't make any sense. I know that that's a callback, but she hasn't seen the film yet because it's set 100 years after her death.
And it doesn't really make sense. And it's one of those things like in films where you're kind of trying to, you know, films trying to make the origin for everything, for every little plot detail.
Yeah.
Like, I know you're not like a Star Wars guy, but if anyone's seen the film Solo, where it has fucking origins for how he got his jacket, why his last name is Solo, where he got that gun, why he parts his hair to this side.
Oh my god.
It's the thing like when films like kind of like, yeah, you know, when you're doing like a prequel, you don't need, or like flashbacks, you don't need to explain everything. Sweets for the sweet could just have been a cool bit of graffiti.
Yeah.
It's fine. Anyway, it's grim. He dies. The dad takes the mirror from the daughter and shoves it in Candyman's face and is like, look at you. Why would she want you now? And then he says, Candyman.
Yeah, my favourite bit about that is he says, he's holding up the mirror to Candyman's dying face and he's like, my daughter can't even look at you now. Over his shoulder, we see his daughter.
Next shot.
Cannot tear her eyes off him.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Just shows that all dads are idiots.
Yeah, thank you. And then, like, this is all, you know, it's grim, it's good, but I just wish that you didn't have that, I don't know, the kind of the crowbarring in of the Candyman name, and the fact that he looks in the mirror and says Candyman and then he dies, and it just feels just a little bit contrived, but whatever.
Agreed. So then we cut back to Annie, our heroine, and she's running through the streets of Mardi Gras. Everyone's in crazy costumes. Everyone's getting drunk. There's lots of shots of just naked people just fucking in the street.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Love it. You love to see it.
Yeah.
And then unfortunately we get a bit with the DJ, the Kingfish, who is like on a big stage and everyone is before him and he's dressed like a king and he's got like a goblet of wine and he's just doing his like bullshit shtick into a microphone over this huge PA of just being like, I'm the Kingfish, New Orleans. Crawdads,
po-boys,
gumbo, po-boys, Urban Street, jazz, it's the Kingfish, and he like salutes and everybody in the city is like, woo, we love it, fuck going to see a band or fuck like banging in the street or whatever. We just want to stand before this guy and just like watch him big himself up.
Yeah. And then she runs past him back to her old family home again.
There's a lot of like the same locations. Location gets visited about three times.
This is why I'm getting a bit confused about the order that things happen, because it feels like, we keep on going back and going back.
And she's smashing up every mirror in her family home, smashing, smashing, smashing. And then she works out that there's this outbuilding behind the house where when she was a kid, she was never allowed to play. And that was the old slave quarters.
Matthew pops up.
Oh, yeah, the little boy.
He gone missing. Hey, here I am. And she's like, okay, great. Go get help. Okay, bye.
See ya.
Good that we're keeping track of where my character is.
Okay. Bye. And then she goes into the building and there's this terrible storm and it's flooding the basement.
Yeah.
And there's skeletons that are coming out.
Like a spooky skeleton hand falls on her face. And it's, really.
Why are they there? Why are there skeletons there? I don't know. Spooky though.
Yeah.
And then Candyman pops up and rather than say, be my victim.
I choose you.
rather than say be my victim, this time he says be my witness. Now, I was sort of trying to unpack this. So, like, the be my victim in the first film, when he first said it, I was like, that's a bit clunky dialogue. And then I sort of thought about it, and he kind of explains it more, and it's this idea of, like, oh, we'll have immortality. You know, I'll kill you, but none of us will be dead because we'll live, immortal in the stories that people tell of the killing. Be my victim. And that's, like, the seductive thing. I guess with be my witness, that means he wants her to watch while he kills other people. But he's done that loads.
But I wasn't
sure. She's watched him kill her husband, her mum. He's killed some other people with other people watching.
I wasn't sure if this was the point where the flashback happened.
It probably is, Tom. It probably is. I got
like,
muddled.
Because he's like being like, be my witness. Here's my backstory.
And oh, right.
And so maybe it's like he's... The way I thought it was like, he was like, I want you to understand where I come from and you come from, and to understand, you know, like be witness to the horrible thing that happened to me so you can understand this. I did kill everybody else in my family, was in some way responsible for their death, but never mind. For some reason I'm focused on you. And
I guess it's because she's pregnant.
Yeah, so she's having a baby and he's like, join me. And I was like, I don't know what he wants.
Yes, what does he want? Because surely if he wants her to have the baby and keep the legacy going, he should just leave her alone?
Yes, but if he's going to kill her, because there's a bit where he's got the hook and he's got his arms around her and it's like he's going to kill her. It's like, so the baby doesn't really come into this. Like, you basically just want to kind of like drag her off to hell to be your... I don't know what, like,
mate.
Yeah, your mate, your like granddaughter or something. Like, I don't know. I don't know what that is. And I've written the note, okay... But why would she want to die and live with Candyman? Because that's what he's offering. He's basically, come with me, let me kill you, and you can go live with me. I've killed all of your family, and I'm made of bees. And it's kind of like... And the benefit for her is...
I guess...
Dot, dot, dot.
Maybe immortality. Maybe he can offer immortality.
Yeah, what, as a pile of bees?
Well, it worked for Virginia Madsen. She's now immortal as... You know, Mrs. Candyman.
Yeah, and this is where it kind of like comes to a head, where he's kind of like, come, here's my terrible offer for you. Take my hooked hand and we will be together. And she's like, that's shit. And then so she just smashes the mirror and everything starts flooding. Well, she pulls the mirror off the wall. Everything starts to flood. Matthew comes back. He's like, hello, it's me. We're keeping track of my character. Me and some other kids from earlier, we've come to save you. Ha ha. And then the handyman pops out of the water. And he's like, bleh. and then she smashes the mirror. And he turns into like a CGI glass version of the Candyman. And shatters in a sort of T-1000, like frozen in liquid nitrogen-ish.
The effect is okay.
It's not too bad for 95.
Where were the bees, though? I was like, this is quite good. A bunch of bees are going to come out.
They're all frozen. They're all frozen bees. It's frozen solid. But we did get a CGI bee swarm in the flashback, which did not look so good.
Not so good on the old bee swarm there. And then he's dead. He's dead.
There we go.
He's dead. Then she walks out into the street with Michael. They're holding hands. The kingfish is like, oh,
I guarantee everyone had a good time.
And then we get one little kind of addendum where it's like in the
years later,
she's had her baby. She's got a little girl named Isabel after her great grandmother, and
nightmarish bedroom.
She's got this like whole Halloween themed bedroom, which I fucking love. But like, it's painted on the walls. This isn't like temporary Halloween decorations. This like nightmarish, psychedelic, spooky castle dreamscape in like purple and orange and black and red, and it's all. God, what a brave kid.
Yeah, it's really weirdly spooky. This is where my suspension of disbelief was like, B-man, okay, fine. I'm on board with this, but like, who is decorating their child's bedroom like this? This is bonkers.
Oh, yeah. And she's like, who was my... She's like, who's that? And looks at a picture of Candyman and she's like, oh, he's your great-granddad or whatever it was. And I'll tell you an interesting story about him one day. And the girl's like, okay. Oh, tell me now.
Like, no, go to bed now,
even though it's clearly broad daylight outside. Anyway, yeah. Bye. And then on the girl's mobile, she's got a little heart-shaped mirror. And she says, Candyman, for some reason. Candyman. Says it again. Candyman. Candyman. And then her mum like clamps her hand over her mouth and is like, you shut the fuck up.
Go to bed! I said, go to bed!
And then the credits roll.
Yeah. Ha, ha, ha!
Yeah. It's quite a good ending.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's a good ending. It was a bit weird that she was like, who's this? Oh, I'll explain to you. Like, she obviously doesn't know who he's the Candyman, but she knows about the Candyman.
She knows the name.
Anyway. Yeah, like, not bad. I don't think it's anywhere near as good as the first one.
No.
The first one just feels like it's, like, got much better performances and, like, there's just, like, a lot... I don't know, it's a tighter script and there's, like... It's a lot more atmospheric, like, in its execution and how it is to look. And this just kind of, like... It's just some scenes of people doing stuff and I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm getting from this. Like, some stuff, I guess.
Yeah. Now, apparently, Bernard Rose, director of the first Candyman, did write a script for a Candyman 2.
Ah.
But I wonder if you can guess the reason that the studio rejected it and went for a completely different script and completely different director.
Would it not have the Candyman in it?
Correct. It had no Candyman in it. He wanted it to be like the franchise would be a series of anthologies. It was going to be about a different urban legend.
Okay.
And I quite like them, you know, maybe Bloody Mary or whatever, yeah. I don't know. But I would love to have read that script. That could be quite good, but maybe also terrible.
Yeah.
So there was a similar thing with John Carpenter's Halloween. Originally, every one of those was going to be a different thing. But then they were like, nah, you don't get to do that. We're doing Halloween 2 with Michael Myers again. Oh, it wasn't very good. Okay, Halloween 3, let's do your weird script about robots then.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it would have been cool to followed on, I guess, in more of like a Hellraiser way, where you had Helen and explored somebody else becoming the Candyman.
Well, because that could have been so good. Yeah, exactly. You don't need Candyman anymore, but like she's the new legend, right? The skull, scabby head lady.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's probably what they would have called her. You have to say scabby head lady three times. Take the ages.
Yeah, it doesn't roll off. It just doesn't come up in conversation as much as...
I'm going to do some snooping. I'm hoping his script like might exist online in part or something. I'd love to read some of that. But this isn't bad. Like, it's completely what... If someone had asked me to guess what happens in Candyman 2, this is kind of what it, right? This is what I would have guessed.
I think this was something actually that we were talking about almost like before we started the film. We were kind of like, oh yeah, like Candyman had a daughter. Like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That's not been explored. And that was exactly what was in this film. It's like, okay, yeah, fine.
That. And that's interesting to me as well, because for the third one, I can't think of anything that's...
Like, anything unexplored.
Yeah.
Other than he's like, I'm back, I guess.
Yeah.
The mirror isn't the source of my power or the memory, you know. Yeah, why?
Well, that's interesting. So yeah, now that the mirror's broken... If someone says his name 5 times, does that do anything?
Huh. Yeah, well, guess we'll have to wait
until Candyman 3, Day of the Dead.
It's also, like, in this film a bit, like, the whole thing of... She says Candyman 5 times, and he doesn't show up, much like in the first film. Because
it brings him back, but just he doesn't immediately jump out and go, bleh, out of there. But the fact that she did that is what instigates the movie's events.
Yeah. But it means that sort of like, but then there's a lot of people like the cop who says Candyman five times and boom, there they are. But like when the mum gets killed, Candyman just pops up because Candyman just pops up. So it's a bit loose.
Well, he can do it when he wants. So don't forget Purcell at the beginning. He says it five times at the book tour. At the book
and then
event,
he doesn't show up until
later, later when he's in the bar. He doesn't show up until it would be like dramatically.
He's waiting for it's like, you know, he's going to have the most narrative impact or whatever.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I think my favourite ones are when someone just says it. And then literally, it's like with the psychiatrist and the cop in this one, and yeah. Psychiatrist in the last one, where they just say it five times, and then it's just like, bam! It's like, oh, fuck! Yeah, those ones, you know, you kind of, you think they'll be a bit more of a tease, but it's just like, nah, straight in. Bosh.
Bosh-a-roo. All right, well, tell you what, having a great time with the franchise so far, baby.
Lovely time.
Yeah.
You better believe it.
So next time, do come back where we will be talking about Candyman 3, Day of the Dead. Be there or be square. I'm Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny.
And
ha, 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 ha. Ooh, behave.